Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 19th of May 2026. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Bridget Dool and Di Shaw. They've been recorded at home by Bridget Dool and Judith Piggott. We also have a home improvement article from Oxford City Council read by David Field. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 5:06 a.m. and sunset is at 8:57 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events of births and deaths from May the 19th in history. In 1182, the high altar of Paris Cathedral, Notre Dame, was consecrated by Cardinal Henri de Château-Marsay and Maurice de Sully. In 1536, Anne Boleyn, second wife of English King Henry VIII, was beheaded at the Tower of London on charges of adultery, incest, and treason. In 1568, Mary, Queen of Scots, was placed under house arrest by Queen Elizabeth I. This turned out to be a 19-year incarceration, which eventually resulted in her execution for treason at Fotheringay Castle in Northamptonshire in 1587. As a side note, there is an excellent song called Fotheringay by Fairport Convention, written and beautifully sung by Sandy Denny on their 1968 album, What We Did on Our Holidays. In 1883, William F. Buffalo Bill Cody opened Buffalo Bill's Wild West in North Platte, Nebraska. This four-hour extravaganza toured the United States and Europe for decades, even performing for Queen Victoria. The production played a massive role in romanticizing the American Old West. In 1962, Marilyn Monroe sang Happy Birthday, Mr. President to JFK before 15,000 attendees, accompanied by jazz pianist Hank Jones at Madison Square Gardens in New York City. Born on this day in 1815, Catherine Dickens, born Catherine Thompson Hogarth, British author, cookbook novelist of What Shall We Have for Dinner?, and wife of Charles Dickens, was born in Edinburgh. In 1861, Dame Nellie Melba, CBE, born Helen Porter Mitchell, Australian operatic soprano and face of the Australian $100 note, was born in Richmond, Victoria, Australia. Melba's name is associated with four foods, all of which were created in her honour by the famous French chef Auguste Escoffier. Peach Melba, a dessert made of peaches, raspberry sauce and vanilla ice cream. Melba sauce, a sweet puree of raspberries and red currant. Melba toast, a crisp, dry toast. And Melba garniture, chicken, truffles and mushroom, stuffed into tomatoes with a velouté sauce. In 1879, Nancy Witcher Langhorne Astor, Viscountess Astor, American-born British politician and the first female MP in the House of Commons, was born in Danville, Virginia. Astor became known for her altercations with Winston Churchill. One such famous anecdote, of which there are variations, tells of Churchill's exchange with Astor when she failed to beat him in an argument. She broke off with the remark, "If you were my husband, I'd put poison in your tea." He retorted with, "Madam, if I were your husband, I'd drink it with pleasure." In 1909, Sir Nicholas George Winton, British humanitarian known as the British Schindler, due to saving 669 children from the Nazis, was born in Hampstead, London. In the world of film and entertainment, there were several notable births on this day. In 1926, David Jacobs, British broadcaster famous as the host of Jukebox Jury, was born in London. In 1931, Trevor Peacock, British stage and screen actor, probably most well known for playing Jim Trott in The Vicar of Dibley, in which his famous lines included, No. Yes, was born in Edmonton, Middlesex. Peacock was also a screenwriter and songwriter who penned an American number one hit called Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, sung by Herman's Hermits. In 1932, Alma Colgan, British pop singer whose songs included Dreamboat and I Can't Tell a Waltz from a Tango, was born in Whitechapel, London. In 1939, James Fox, British actor known for The Servant and A Passage to India, amongst others, was born in London. In 1944, Peter Mayhew, British-American actor, most famous for portraying Chewbacca in four Star Wars movies, was born in Barnes, Surrey. In 1945, Pete Townshend, British rock guitarist, composer and vocalist with The Who, was born in Chiswick, London. In 1947, Steve Curry, British rock bassist with T-Rex and Mark Bolan, was born in Grimsby, Lincolnshire. In 1948, Grace Jones, Jamaican-American disco singer of Slave to the Rhythm and actress in the James Bond movie A View to a Kill, was born in Spanish Town, St. Catherine, Jamaica. And in 1953, Victoria Wood, British BAFTA award-winning comedienne and actress, probably best known for the sitcom Dinner Ladies, was born in Bury, Lancashire. And deaths on this day. In 988, St. Dunstan, English Archbishop of Canterbury, Abbot of Glastonbury Abbey, Benedictine monk, illustrator and silversmith, who restored monastic life after the era of Viking raids, died aged about 79. He was canonized in 1029. In 1786, John Stanley, English blind composer and organist, died aged 74. Stanley, who was left almost completely blind following an accident at the age of 2, became the youngest ever person to obtain the Bachelor of Music degree from the University of Oxford. In 1898, William Ewart Gladstone, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom four times, the most of any politician, died of heart failure aged 88. In 1935, T.E. Lawrence, British author, soldier and diplomat, most famous for his liaison role in Arabia during World War I, died aged 46 in a motorcycle accident in Dorset. His many roles during his life and his ability to describe them vividly in writing earned him international fame as Lawrence of Arabia, a title used for the 1962 film based on his wartime activities. In 1966, a tortoise reportedly given to Tonga's king by Captain James Cook in 1773 died aged around 193. In 1994, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, American First Lady from 1961 to 1963, died of cancer in Manhattan, New York, aged 64. Her personal style, which became known as the Jackie look, inspired worldwide fashion trends during the 1960s. And in 2006, Freddie Garrity, English pop singer and frontman with Freddie and the Dreamers, died in Bangor, North Wales, following an illness while on holiday, aged 69. And now on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
A memorial service for the three victims of the Bicester Motion Fire on the 15th of May last year was held on the first anniversary of the tragedy. St. Edward's Church in Bicester hosted the loved ones and friends of Jenny Logan, Martin Sadler and Dave Chester. All three died in the fire. Oxfordshire's Chief Fire Officer, Rob McDougall, said at the time, "It is with a very heavy heart that we today report the loss of two of our firefighters." Tributes flooded in from Oxfordshire and beyond. Flowers were laid at the scene. Oxford Town Hall flew its flag at half-mast. Sir Keir Starmer described the deaths as devastating. Former firefighter Dave Ward said, "It's a very close relationship in the fire services. We are all brothers and sisters. It will be quite hard on them. firefighters were joined by a large number of public mourners as the community gathered to pay their respects to the firefighters Sadler and Logan at their funerals in the town last year. Questions into the cause of the fire, which tragically claimed the three lives, remain unanswered 1 year on. Jenny Logan, Martin Sadler, and Dave Chester lost their lives in the blaze which engulfed Hangar 79. The funerals of the two firefighters took place in June and July, where they were both honoured with a procession attended by hundreds of people. Mr. Chester, whose funeral took place in Tackley, was a father of two who repaired heritage buildings at the former RAF base. The inquests into their deaths, which were opened at Oxford Coroner's Court in June, listed their causes of death as multiple traumatic injuries. A date for the full inquest has not yet been set, but it is understood the substantive pre-inquest review hearing will take place later this year. Despite a Thames Valley Police Major Crime Unit launching a probe in May last year, the cause of the fire continues to remain a mystery as the tragic one-year anniversary is marked across the county. A Thames Valley Police spokesman confirmed that the incident had not been classed as a criminal investigation, but called it an unexplained death investigation. The force is said to be working with Oxfordshire County Council and the Health and Safety Executive in the multi-agency death investigation. Oxfordshire County Council also said it is working closely with the other authorities and remains in close and regular contact with the families of the bereaved.
Oxfordshire's controversial transport boss, who ushered in major changes, including the congestion charge, zero emission and 20 mile an hour zones, is stepping down. After a 4-year tenure, Councillor Andrew Gant, Lib Dem, will step away from his county council post as cabinet member for transport management. He said, "After 4 years in post, I've decided not to seek re-election to the Cabinet of Oxfordshire County Council. I'm hugely proud of all we have achieved, and now is the right time to think about demands and priorities. I look forward to supporting the clear principles of this visionary Liberal Democrat administration in any way I can." This comes ahead of the local authority's annual full council meeting. It follows the loss of a Lib Dem majority at the County Council, with fellow Cabinet member Councillor Ben Higgins leaving his role and the party to become independent, with Councillor Nick Cotter following suit on the 7th of May. In recent weeks, Mr. Gant has apologised for inaccurate data being used to report on the congestion charge, saying the local authority had been let down by a company contracted to compile information. He has stood by the signage for the charge, which has been described by local businesses as misleading, placed miles away from congestion charge zones. He has slammed the criticisms of the county's pothole strategy, inviting Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer to visit Oxfordshire, after he suggested the local authority had not been using government money effectively to fix its roads. Mr. Gant, a stipendiary lecturer in music at St. Peter's College, Oxford, also holds a seat on the City Council and has been involved in local politics for over a decade. First elected to the City Council for the Lib Dems in Summertown in May 2014, he has unsuccessfully run as a parliamentary candidate for the Cotswolds and Staffordshire Moorlands constituencies in 2017 and 2019. He was elected to the County Council in 2021, becoming a cabinet member in 2022. Mr. Gant has represented several wards amid boundary changes. He currently represents Wolvercote and Cutteslow at the county level. For the city, Cutteslow and Sunnymead. He intends to continue as a ward councillor despite leaving his cabinet role. Leader of the council, Liz Leffman, stated, I would like to thank Andrew for his years of service to our communities as Cabinet Member for Transport Management. Under his guidance, Oxfordshire has become a flagship for safer, cleaner transport and active travel, with the introduction of 20-mile-an-hour speed limits, safer cycling and walking in our towns and villages, and the introduction of electric buses and the temporary congestion charge in Oxford. He will, of course, continue to be a member of the Lib Dem group on the County Council, and I look forward to working with him in that capacity. Also, a new Oxfordshire Transport Chief has been appointed after the resignation of the controversial boss who brought in the congestion charge. Councillor Rebecca Fletcher has been made the Cabinet Member for Transport Management at Oxfordshire County Council after Councillor Andrew Gant announced he was standing down at midday on Monday, May the 11th. Ms Fletcher is the Liberal Democrat Member for Harwell, Western Valley and Blueberry. She was elected in 2025 and has lived in Oxfordshire since 2021. Ms Fletcher works for a medical school in London, so her particular interests lie in improving community health, well-being and social care provision. The appointment has been listed on her councillor details page on Oxfordshire County Council website. Her Oxfordshire's responsibilities include public transport, highways management, street lighting and parking. Potholes, the continuation of the congestion charge, set to become traffic filters after the reopening of the Botley Road this summer, zero emission zones, potential new park and rides, and the expansion of 20-mile-an-hour limits are all in her remit. This follows Mr. Gant standing down from post after 4 years.
An Oxford choir serenaded bees to inaugurate a new apiary. The musical welcome took place at the city's Bartlemer Sports Ground, where members of Oriel College's Chapel Choir performed a unique madrigal. The event featured a performance of Melis O'Mello's 18th century piece by Charles Butler, often known as the father of English beekeeping, that imitates the hum of bees. The apiary, managed by the Oxford Beekeeping Society, was founded last year by history doctoral student Spencer Drake. Mr. Drake said, "It was the bees' knees to help celebrate Oriel's 700th anniversary at the apiary." He also highlighted support from the college, adding, "All of the generous funding we've received towards kickstarting the apiary has been made available thanks to Oriel's 700th anniversary, and in return, we'll be supplying bountiful pots of fresh honey for the college's summer anniversary party." The beehives were funded by Oriel as part of its 700th anniversary celebrations.
A record-breaking number of people in their thousands ran the Oxford 10K, raising £350,000 for charity. Thousands of runners took part in the Bidwell's Oxford 10K to support Muscular Dystrophy UK. This is the leading charity for more than 110,000 children and adults in the UK living with one of over 60 muscle-wasting and weakening conditions. A record-breaking 7,500 people signed up to the event, with nearly 6,000 crossing the finish line on the day. It's the biggest event to date in its 44-year history, having sold out for a third consecutive year. As of Sunday afternoon, the runners are on track to collectively raise £350,000 for the charity. The only closed route race in Oxford was officially started by the Blackmore family from Wantage. Leanne Blackmore and her two daughters, Evie 15 and Martha 11, all live with muscular dystrophy, FSHD. After Evie completed the 3K race in 2025, the family were delighted to be back as official race starters. Leanne said, "To open this year's race was a true honour and to do so with the girls was an incredible moment. It's such a worthy cause, and to see people in Oxford all coming together to support it was just magical. The first 10K runner across the finish line was Alex Brampton, who ran the course with a chip time of 31.23 minutes. While the fastest female was Katie Ward with a chip time of 36.23 minutes. Jessie Keithley, events manager of Muscular Dystrophy UK, said, "Congratulations to everybody who completed the 2026 Bidwells Oxford 10K and Junior 3K. We'd like to say a huge thanks to everybody who took part, as well as the supporters and all our volunteers that helped make this event a true success. Each year, this community event continues to grow and has sold out for the last 3 years. It brings people from Oxford together to support Muscular Dystrophy UK. The funds raised will help us to continue funding groundbreaking research and support those living with a muscle wasting and weakening condition, including our official race starters, Leanne and her two daughters, Evie and Martha. A special thanks to our title sponsor, Bidwells, for their continued support. We're looking forward to our sister event in Cambridge in October and our 2027 Bidwells Oxford 10K.
Two Oxfordshire brothers, who found stability through foster care, say it gave them the routine and support they needed to start building a future. Identical twins, Chris and Johnny Taylor, 18, from Charlbury, entered care at the age of 14 and have since found direction in life thanks to the structure and encouragement provided by their foster carer. The twins, who train as boxers at Banbury Boxing Club and are currently studying for their A-levels, credit their progress to the environment provided by foster care. Johnny said, "Our days are very structured now, and that's something that could only have happened through being fostered. When we first moved in with our brilliant foster carer, Lucy, life felt uncertain, and we weren't always sure what support would be available to us. Everything felt strange and new. However, over time, that began to change. Routine and structure gradually became a source of reassurance, helping us to feel more secure and confident, something we hadn't really had until that point. At first, it felt like staying at a friend's house. Then after a while, it felt like home." The twins now train together and coach others at Banbury Boxing Club. They also share sports and fitness advice through their social media channels, including TikTok and Instagram. The brothers, who have both been offered unconditional places to study psychology and sports performance at the University of Portsmouth, will begin their degrees in September. They say the chance to feel settled has been crucial to their success. Johnny said, "Once you're settled, then you can dream. Your ambition and drive kick in." Having their own bedrooms and enjoying regular family routines such as shared meals and holidays has helped them to feel truly at home. Chris said, "It just makes everything calm, you know. It's like we can wake up, we know what we're doing. No stress." Their foster carer, Lucy, is supported by Oxfordshire County Council's foster care team, which provides assistance, peer support and training. The twins' story is being shared during Foster Care Fortnight, May the 11th to the 24th. To encourage more Oxfordshire residents to consider fostering. Councillor Sean Gall, the Council's Cabinet Member for Children, Education and Young People Services, said, "Chris and Johnny's experience shows how fostering can make a real difference for children and young people, replacing uncertainty with stability, support and a sense of belonging that is now helping them pursue their ambitions. I hope in Chris and Johnny we have two future boxing stars, and I wish them the very best." More information about fostering is available at oxfordshire.gov.uk/fostering.
Here is a brief summary of the recent election results, which left all three local councils, Oxford City, West Oxfordshire and Chaibo District Councils as NOC, that is, not overall control for a single party. The control of Oxford City Council hangs in the balance after elections left no party with overall majority. The city took to the polls with half of the council seats up for grabs, one in each of the 24 wards. The council was previously run by a Labour minority administration with 21 seats. Party groups and their leaders were digesting and having conversations about who will run the council after the vote, which left Labour with 20 seats, losing one, the Greens with 13 seats, gaining four, and the Liberal Democrats remaining with 9 seats. The Greens celebrated an absolutely incredible night and their highest ever number of seats on the council. Labour Group leader, Councillor Susan Brown, described it as a roller coaster of a night. Independent Councillor Sajid Malik, part of the Real Independence Group, held his seat, meaning the group maintains its 2 seats, no change. Independent Oxford Alliance did not gain any new seats, but does hold 4 on the council, so no change. Oxford Independent Group now has 0 seats, losing 2. Both councillors who were members of the group did not stand for re-election this year. Conservatives and Reform have no seats and gained no seats at this election. The Liberal Democrat-led minority administration is expected to continue running West Oxfordshire District Council after no party gained overall control. Following the local elections, the current arrangement of the Lib Dems linking up with Labour and the Greens is expected to continue. There were 16 wards being contested, a total of 16 out of 49 seats. Of the 16 seats up for election this time round, about a third of the council, 7 were won by the Liberal Democrats, 7 by the Conservatives, 1 by Reform UK, and 1 the Green Party. Following the election, there are now 20 Liberal Democrat councillors, 16 Conservative, 8 Labour, 4 Greens, and 1 from Reform UK. Charwell District Council remains under no overall control after the local elections, with the Liberal Democrats strengthening their position as the largest party and Reform UK winning seats on the authority for the first time. Voters across Banbury, Bicester and Kidlington went to the polls, with 16 of the council's 48 seats coming up for election, and 2 more contested in by-elections in Banbury Calthorpe, as well as Easington and Bicester West. Before the vote, the council was led by Liberal Democrat Group leader David Hingley, whose party held 17 seats in a no overall control setup. Following the count, the Liberal Democrats gained 4 seats and are now well placed to continue running the council as party leaders begin talks over whether to form a minority administration, strike an agreement with others, or consider a coalition. Reform UK gained its first 6 seats on the council. The Greens maintained their 4-seat hold on the council. On the other side of the spectrum, the Conservatives lost 6 of their previous 12 seats. While the Independents now only have 1 seat on the council, Labour lost 2 of its previous 10 seats. However, will they be the last district elections? It is likely the elections in Oxford City and areas of Charwell and West Oxfordshire were the last district council elections to be held in Oxfordshire. Local government reorganisation is set to come into force in April 2028, with elections for a temporary shadow authority or authorities taking place next year. Currently, the running of services such as social care, roads, libraries and waste disposal is by a county council, with five district and borough councils responsible for rubbish collection, housing and planning, and environmental health. According to proposals made by the existing councils, Oxfordshire will be divided into either one, two or three unitary authorities, and the government is set to decide on this before the parliamentary summer recess in July of this year.
Blue plaque has been unveiled in memory of a leading advocate for children's rights. Baroness Lucy Faithfull was honoured with a blue plaque in a ceremony on Saturday, May the 9th. The campaigner was born in South Africa and returned to England in 1916, where she was educated at Bournemouth and then at the Sorbonne in Paris. During the Second World War, she was appointed a regional welfare officer for the evacuee programme, which involved travelling with the children and troubleshooting, and later became an inspector with the Home Office's Children's Department. She was appointed by Oxford City Council in 1958 as one of the first children's officers created by the Children Act of 1948, a groundbreaking national commitment to children's welfare. The expectation was that apart from being an administrator, she should know all the children in care personally and be, in effect, a one-woman social service. After the care system became county-based, from 1970 to 1974, she was Director of Social Services in Oxford, receiving an OBE on retirement. In 1975, former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, then leader of the opposition, persuaded her to accept a life peerage and bring her experience to debates in the Lords. The first social worker to sit there, she became an outstanding, tireless and outspoken advocate of children's interests and other social causes. She helped create and chaired the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Children and had a seminal influence on the Children Act of 1989. She held many trusteeships, chairs and presidencies, including Barnardo's, the National Children's Bureau, which she helped found, and the NSPCC, and worked behind the scenes with ministers on the committee grind. She helped create the Lucy Faithfull Foundation, a UK child protection charity that seeks to prevent child sexual abuse before it happens through treatment of abusers and other awareness projects. She was commemorated by the Oxfordshire Blue Plaques Board with a plaque on 303 Woodstock Road, her address from 1958 until her passing in 1996. This marks the first blue plaque unveiled in Oxfordshire in 2026.
A children's hospice is appealing for public support to help fund a year of specialist nursing care through donated goods. Helen and Douglas House is calling for donations of good quality pre-loved items for its 25 charity shops during a two-week appeal from the 12th of May to the 26th of May. The hospice's goal is to collect 1,700 bags of donations, which could help fund a nurse for a year. Sally Hayes, Director of Nursing and Care at Helen and Douglas House, said, "Every child is unique and special, and we strive in every moment and every interaction to make sure we are reflecting that. Helen and Douglas House is a very special place, and it means so much to families and staff to be part of this community. However, we also rely on the generosity of public donations to help raise the £6 million a year it costs to provide our care. This International Nurses Day, if you can, please turn your pre-loved items into donations that could help fund a nurse and support families in the future when they need us most. Further details can be found on hdh.org.uk.
Farmers are now being paid to help protect infrastructure like railways and power lines from flood damage as part of a major environmental project. The Even Load Landscape Recovery Scheme, covering parts of Oxfordshire, Gloucestershire and Warwickshire, is one of the UK's first large-scale projects to move from planning into full delivery. More than 3,000 hectares of land across the region will be restored under the scheme, which aims to tackle flooding at its source by improving soil health, restoring floodplains, and increasing the landscape's capacity to hold water. The scheme is delivered partly by the North East Cotswold Farmer Cluster, NECFC, and forms part of a £100 million funding package that has been secured with Natural England and the Department for the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA. Initial investments from the infrastructure owners like Network Rail, Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, SSEN, and Oxfordshire County Council over the next 3 years is expected to be in excess of £3 million. Natural flood management methods are being introduced to slow and store water higher up in the catchment. Tim Field, Executive Director of Even Load Landscape Recovery, said, "This partnership marks a new chapter in how we think about flood prevention and asset protection. By working with Network Rail, SSEN and Oxfordshire County Council, we're supporting infrastructure resilience with practical changes on the ground. Farmers are uniquely placed to manage water at source. By restoring habitats and improving soil structure across the catchment, we can reduce flood risk downstream while strengthening farm businesses for the long term. The scheme pays farmers to create wetlands, woodlands, and meadows on less productive or flood-prone land. This benefits nature, improves resilience, and helps protect infrastructure from flood damage." Ryan Barrett, Weather Resilience and Climate Adaptation Programme Manager at Network Rail, said, "In this area, the railway crosses the Even Load River 27 times, creating multiple pinch points where flooding can disrupt services. Investing in natural flood management gives us an opportunity to reduce risk before it reaches the railway, and we're looking forward to working with ELR on our key risk areas to make the railway line more resilient now and into the future." Chris Bratt, Director of Asset Management at SSEN, said, "We have critical electricity infrastructure in the Even Load catchment, including substations that must remain operational during extreme weather. By investing in nature-based solutions upstream, we can reduce long-term flood risk to these assets."
Two short items about enjoying local activities. An over-50s walking football team in Oxford celebrated an unforgettable triumph at an international tournament in Mallorca. Oxford United Walking Football Club sent its over-50s and 65s squads to the Mallorcan Walking Football Tournament from April the 30th to May the 4th. In the group stage, they faced strong opposition from teams representing Glasgow, Morocco and Poland. Oxford adapted by making key tactical decisions ahead of the knockout rounds, including a formation change. The adjustments paid off as the over-50s team edged past Morocco in what was described as dramatic semi-final, decided by penalties. In both the semi-final and final, goalkeeper Stephen Bellinger produced crucial saves, while Quainton and Mark Creswell helped secure the victory. The win sparked emotional celebrations by players, teammates and supporters. And secondly, a new community choir is launching in Wallingford. Simply Sing with Tracy Noble held its first session at Ridgeway Community Church on Thursday the 14th of May, starting at 7:45 p.m. The choir is open to everyone, regardless of experience or ability, and offers a relaxed, supportive environment without auditions, harmonies or sheet music. Founder Tracy Noble said, "This choir is for anyone who loves to sing, even if they think they can't. Maybe you only sing in the shower or in the car. That's absolutely perfect. Simply Sing is about joy, not perfection. The first session is a free taster from 7:45 p.m. to 9:15 p.m. at Ridgeway Community Church, OX10 OEW. For more information, email info@simplysinger.co.uk.
A police helicopter was sent up while officers chased stolen motorbikes through Oxford. Three motorcycles were seized by the traffic officers on Sunday evening, May the 10th, in a crackdown across the city. Two people were arrested as a result of the chase, which also saw the dog unit get involved. A police spokesman said, "Three stolen vehicles are one step closer to being returned to their owners after we deployed a number of marked and unmarked tactical pursuit and containment units to Oxford in what can only be described as a highly successful operation. We engaged in a number of simultaneous pursuits across the city, arresting two people and recovering stolen property. What more could you want? If you're going to engage in theft of motor vehicles, don't say we didn't warn you. We will pursue you, we will catch you, and you will get an all-inclusive room at our nearest custody."
A gigantic mosaic has been created in tribute to Sir David Attenborough. The piece, created by pupils at Europa School UK in Culham, near Abingdon, celebrates the broadcaster's 100th birthday and reflects his lifelong commitment to the natural world and sustainability. Titled Papilio Europa Attenborough, the collaborative artwork is made up of hundreds of hand-drawn images of plants and animals. It was created by 500 pupils from across the school and will be displayed on site for students, staff and visitors to enjoy. A spokesperson for the school said, "Sustainability is very important to our school and our community, and this felt like a wonderful event to celebrate together." Key Stage 2 teacher, Mrs. Harries, said, "Pupils were especially enthusiastic about contributing to something in honour of Sir David." She said, "The children were so excited at the idea of creating a special gift for Sir David. They all know him and they were eager to talk about the wildlife they had watched on his programmes. They got stuck in drawing their favourite planet or animal and created beautiful pictures. We have everything on there from snakes to jellyfish via the most popular, the axolotl, an amphibian." The school now plans to send a poster of the mosaic to Sir David along with photographs of some of the individual drawings. Mrs. Harries said, "We plan to send him a poster of the artwork along with photographs of some of our individual pieces. He has done so much to inspire a love of nature and we wanted to thank him for inspiring us." In the week leading up to the milestone, Sir David said he was completely overwhelmed by the birthday messages pouring in and thanked his well wishers most sincerely. In a recorded audio message shared the night before his birthday, he said, "I had rather thought I would celebrate my 100th birthday quietly, but it seems that many of you have had other ideas."
The next stage of the Botley Road roadworks in Oxford have started, as footways and curbs are set to be replaced ahead of the road's August opening. The work started on the Botley Road on Monday, May the 11th, with more diversions to come for pedestrians in the 3 months before it's due to reopen. The road was closed at the Botley Rail Bridge on April the 11th, 2023, for network rail work linked with a major revamp at Oxford's railway station. So far, the three-year closure has cost £237 million, and although a new rail bridge has been installed, no major work has started yet on providing a new Platform 5 to boost east-west rail links, or to create a new western entrance for the station. The company has said the road is on schedule to reopen by the end of August, and some doubt has been cast on whether work on two new walkways, one on each side of Botley Road at the railway bridge, can be completed in time. Network Rail said the replacement footways and curbs are now being installed, and pedestrian access on the southern side of Botley Road is now closed, with a footway on the northern side instead. A spokesperson said, "From Monday, May the 11th, we'll be working to replace and realign footways and curbs in preparation for the new wider section of Botley Road reopening in August. This work is due to be carried out in stages to minimise disruption as much as possible between the 11th of May until mid-June. The work will involve temporary removing, realigning and replacing footpaths, installing curbs, laying ducting for street lighting, laying paving stones and re-tarmacking the road. Works will take place on the Botley Road between Mill Street and Osney Bridge and the junction of Botley Road with Abingdon Road, Cripley Road and Mill Street in phases. Sections of the footpaths will be temporarily closed off to pedestrians with alternative routes on the opposite side of the road." Network Rail said marshals will be on hand to guide pedestrians and ensure continued access to residential and business frontages, and there will be signposted changes to walking routes, crossing points and cycling areas. A spokesperson previously said, "When the road reopens, the southern pedestrian walkway will be available for use. We are currently reviewing the timeline for completion of the northern walkway. While we continue to explore whether the northern walkway can be completed at the same time, our priority remains reopening the road and one pedestrian route access in August."
Here is a quick look at three local but very different planning applications. Concerns have been raised as plans for a major new housing development on Greenbelt outside Kidlington have been granted planning permission by the council. Developer The Hill Group has been given the go-ahead for a new residential development in Kidlington, North Oxfordshire, which will see 96 homes built on former Greenbelt land. The site on land at Bicester Road and Water Eaton Lane in Gosford, Kidlington, was allocated for a wider house building development in the Charwell District Council local plan for a total of 430 new homes to be delivered. Ian Middleton, councillor for Kidlington East, said these proposals were forced through by the Conservative administration back in 2020. But have taken some time to be delivered, which is why they are only coming to final fruition now. "I opposed all these development sites back in 2018 when they were first mooted. In fact, they were the motivation for me standing seriously as a local councillor at the time. In addition to the mixed tenure homes, the development will include formal and informal sports and play areas for use by the new community." David Cameron's new hobby has been revealed in a planning application at his Cotswold home. The former Prime Minister and his wife Samantha want to replace a dilapidated greenhouse and build a new vegetable patch to grow their own spuds and carrots. Documents say the 59-year-old has become more green-fingered in recent years, having stepped back from politics. His latest planning battle comes just weeks after they won a six-year fight for a swimming pool where neighbours accused him of creating a tacky Benidorm resort in his garden. The application to West Oxfordshire District Council outlined how greener former Witney MP Mr Cameron has got since stepping back from the frontline politics. His representatives wrote, "The applicants have become more green-fingered and would like a dedicated area for greenhouse, garden tools and garden machinery. The vegetable garden, would be made up of oak beams and brick to form a total of 10 raised beds. The statement added, "The proposals create a coherent and discrete arrangement of new outbuildings, a relocated greenhouse and a vegetable garden that together enhance the practical use and enjoyment of the applicant's property." Their representatives said the existing storage space at their home in Dean, near Chipping Norton, does not fully allow for garden machinery, tools, potting shed, and workshop to coexist. A decision on the application will be made at a later date. And then, around 250 objections have been made to a major new Oxfordshire chicken farm planned close to a village. Residents and local societies have spoken out against the proposal for a broiler breeder farm at Deanery Farm, just north of Bampton, which would include 36,000 hens and more roosters. The planning application has been submitted to West Oxfordshire District Council, with the consultation having officially ended last week, although more objections have been made since then. Communities Against Factory Farming has raised objections including around air quality and ammonia, water supply and hydrology, waste management and the risk of avian influenza. Meanwhile, Richard McBrien, chair of the Society for the Protection of Bampton, listed 17 specific points of opposition. Meanwhile, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, said more than 13,000 people had signed an application urging the District Council to reject the proposal.
Major changes are being made at RAF Bryce Norton's air terminal, it has been revealed. The military base in Carterton will be getting upgrades designed to modernise and improve the experience for servicemen and servicewomen taking off. A new passenger baggage handling project has already started and is designed to modernise how baggage and passengers move through the terminal. Its aim is to keep operations running smoothly for the 132,000 passengers who go through the terminal every year. A spokesperson for Bryce Norton said, "The upgrades improve baggage handling equipment and updated screening technology, helping create a faster, more efficient experience for service personnel, MOD staff and authorised passengers using Bryce. Behind every deployment is a huge team effort, and projects like this help keep RAF Bryce Norton moving. In addition to the 132,000 passengers, the station handles more than 25,000 metric tons of freight annually. Bryce Norton supports a high volume of flights for the UK and its allies, and RAF Bryce Norton is home to 5,800 active service personnel, approximately one-fifth of the regular Royal Air Force."
Motorists are divided over Oxfordshire County Council's plans to identify new park and ride sites, with some arguing it's unnecessary, while others argue for the empty Aynsham facility to be opened quickly. Some readers of the Oxford Mail voiced frustration online when asked for their thoughts on the expansion of park and ride sites. One comment said, "We have a new rule in Oxford. Buy a car, park it on your driveway, and don't touch it, as you are already in Oxford. You have reached your destination." Another critic, James Tipler, said, "Oxford doesn't have any need for more park and rides. Every route into the city is covered by one." Others supported the move as an improvement to transport links to Oxford. One comment from Michael Harker Tate said, "Critics need to get real. Oxford invented the park and ride, but then councils lost their way. They're fighting over income instead of benefits. Multimodal journeys need to be standard. We don't need parking in Oxford for commuters who hardly ever go out as part of their work, nor shoppers or visitors who aren't buying heavy goods." Most commentators argued for the linking of the sitting Aynsham Park and Ride to be opened instead of the suggestion of more being built. Reader Michael Saunders said, "Can't they just open the one they built?"
A charity marking 40 years of dedicated support to rough sleepers is hosting an open day in celebration. The Porch, a frontline day service for homeless and housing insecure people, invites the public to its open day on June the 6th from noon to 3 p.m. Originally run by volunteers at All Saints Convent on Magdalen Road, the Porch started as a grassroots response to local need. It now provides a safe haven for approximately 250 people each year, offering a variety of essential services. Its support extends beyond meals and laundry services. It offers tailored guidance to individuals, helping them find more stable, positive futures away from crisis and dependency. Working throughout Oxford, the charity has become a vital part of the support network for individuals facing homelessness. A spokesperson for the charity said, "To mark this milestone, the Porch is hosting the Community Open Day on Saturday, June the 6th, and members of the public are warmly invited to come and see the charity's work firsthand, meet the team, and learn about the difference 4 decades of dedication has made to people's lives in Oxford."
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the talking newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable talking newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
Oxford City Council Home Improvement Agency, the Keeping Warm at Home service. Oxford City Council's Home Improvement Agency is dedicated to helping older adults, residents with disabilities and vulnerable residents within Oxford City to live safely and independently in their own home. The Keeping Warm at Home service is available to all older adults and people who are vulnerable and need help repairing, maintaining or adapting their home. The Home Improvement Agency provides the following services: small repairs, handy person service, repair and assistance funding, disabled facilities grants, and Keeping Warm at Home service itself. Our Keeping Warm at Home service is designed to support owner-occupiers or tenants with repair liabilities who are over 60 years and are on low income with disabilities. This is done by providing a free boiler service and minor gas-related repairs. Ensuring that heating systems are safe, reliable and efficient, this grant plays a vital role in preventing fuel poverty. Maintaining adequate warmth in the home helps protect residents from cold-related illnesses, reduces health risks linked to poorly heated properties, and promotes safer, healthier living conditions. In addition, we offer temporary radiators and warm packs in homes without heating whilst our engineers carry out repairs. Furthermore, we have partnered with SGN, Scotia Gas Networks, previously SSE Scottish and Southern Electricity, who provide us with free carbon monoxide detectors, or CO detectors for short, to give out to our residents. Our team is CO aware, CO trained, and understands the importance of having a CO detector in a home. So we give out free CO detectors to older residents and to residents with disabilities. To contact Oxford City Council HIA, Home Improvement Agency, please send an email to hia@oxford.gov.uk, or you can call 01865 252788. That's 01865 252788. Oxford City Council Home Improvement Agencies look forward to supporting you in improving your home in the best possible way. And for Margaret Simpson, Chair of OxTalk, if any of OxTalk's listeners would like the help and advice, do get in touch with the Home Improvement Agency. These services are available to all older, that is 60 years or older, homeowners and tenants. If you prefer, ask a family member to contact Oxford City Council's Home Improvement Agency on your behalf. Stay safe, stay warm.
Oxford Bus Company has donated £600 worth of bus tickets to support a charity event tackling homelessness. The donation will support the charity Homeless Oxfordshire's inaugural Race Across Oxfordshire fundraiser, helping teams move between checkpoints during the challenge. Inspired by the BBC's Race Across the World, the event saw 20 two-person teams travel across Oxfordshire using public transport with limited money and minimum phone access as they completed tasks along the way. Before the challenge, Tim Wraith, Partnerships Fundraising Manager at Homeless Oxfordshire, said, "We're really excited for our first ever Race Across Oxfordshire, which will test resilience and teamwork while raising vital funds. We've received fantastic support locally, and we're incredibly grateful for the very generous donation made by Oxford Bus Company. The bus tickets will enable a smoother running to the day. We're keen to make this our flagship event, so any way that can help it will be a huge success and will be warmly welcomed. While raising money is always important, this event will also allow us to raise the profile of the charity. The £600 Go Anywhere ticket donation allowed all 40 participants to travel free on the Oxford Bus Company, Thames Travel, Carousel Buses and Pullum's Networks on Monday, May the 11th, when the challenge took place. Teams raced between secret checkpoints across Oxfordshire, completing tasks that tested their patience, resilience and problem-solving skills. The event began and ended at the Voco Oxford Spires Hotel on Abingdon Road. Each team paid £200 entry fee and pledged to raise at least £1,000. The overall fundraising target is £30,000.
Deodorisers have been put around the illegal waste dump in Kidlington in a bid to stop the spread of bad smells. Work continues to be made by contractors to remove the 150-metre-long trail of rubbish in a field alongside the A34. Between 15 and 30 lorry loads of rubbish is being removed each day in a £7.3 million operation, expected to last around 6 months. Led by the Environment Agency, the work involves digging up and shifting 21,000 tonnes of waste, including tyres, shredded plastic and household rubbish from the illegal dumping site, which covers 8,000 square metres, an area bigger than Wembley Stadium. The government agency said waste removal is progressing well since it started in mid-April. But another problem arising is the smell that is being released from the pile as diggers interrupt the waste, which has sat still for some 9 months. The spokesman said, "We have deodorizers on site to help mask the inevitable odor from the waste. As we dig deeper to remove the waste, this may become more noticeable, especially if the warmer weather continues. If you wish to report odour from the site, please contact Charwell District Council, where you can make your report via their website. When completing the details, please use the postcode 0X52JJ and start your description with Kidlington Illegal Waste Site.
A South Oxfordshire theatre is offering a masterclass on cracking cryptic crosswords. Tony Long will be sharing his knowledge in an illustrated talk called Cracking Cryptics, An Easy Guide to Solving Cryptic Crosswords at the Players Theatre in Tame. The event on Saturday, June the 6th is tailored for both beginners and seasoned solvers. Mr. Long, who developed a passion for cryptic crosswords as a child, will guide attendees through a step-by-step analysis of various types of clues. He said, "With cryptic crosswords, you never take a clue at face value. There is usually only one possible answer to a cryptic clue, and the trick is finding the right way to read the clue that leads to the solution." Having solved more than 20,000 puzzles and even compiled his own, Mr. Long is well versed in the art of cryptic crosswords. During his talk, he will explain 10 principal types of clues, such as anagrams and homophones, and his 3 golden rules for solving them. The audience will be involved throughout with plenty of clues to solve. The event will take place at 7:45 and tickets available at tameplayers.co.uk or at the Tame Town Hall Information Centre are priced at £5 each.
T.G. Jones, formerly W.H. Smith, said the decision has not been taken lightly as it confirms that stores are likely to close amid a major restructuring. The high street branches of the stationery and supply chain was rebranded last summer after more than 480 stores were sold to Medallia Capital, owner of Hobbycraft. It has now announced a restructuring plan described as an essential part of the company's turnaround, which could result in the losses of some stores and jobs in its massive portfolio. Retail Gazette said stores understood to be a particular risk include the Oxford branch in Cornmarket Street, as well as others in Swindon, Chippenham, Hampshire and North Wales. The retail giant said the company had been loss-making over the past year due to many factors, not least because of the forced name change from WH Smith, which it claims negatively impacted brand awareness. A spokesperson for T.G. Jones said, "T.G. Jones has launched a formal process known as a restructuring plan to make the business fit for the future. The plan is an essential part of the company's turnaround and will support further investment in stores over the long term. Modelia Capital has committed to financial contributions totaling more than £35 million as part of the process. The decision has not been taken lightly. While we continue to believe in the strength of the core business, T.G. Jones has experienced highly challenging trading conditions over the past year, along with many other brick-and-mortar retailers." Regarding store closures, the spokesperson added, "No decisions have been taken on how this will impact roles, but we will aim to preserve as many jobs as possible. Any potential store closures or role reductions will be subject to appropriate consultation, and we are committed to engaging openly and constructively with colleagues and their representatives. We want to be clear, however, that the plan may result in the closure of some stores and the loss of some roles."
The future of Oxford Castle Quarter is looking more certain after Oxfordshire County Council reached an agreement to purchase the lease at the site. This follows expert independent advice that the deal represents a sound long-term investment for taxpayers while creating conditions to accelerate regeneration in a strategically important part of the city centre. County Council bosses say this also supports a consistent approach to redeveloping the west end of the city, sitting alongside the reimagining of County Hall as a hotel and wider redevelopment underway around the railway station. In 2005, the council decided to sell a long-term lease for Castle Quarter to enable major investment in a site that had previously operated as a prison for many decades. That investment transformed the site and brought new activity into the city centre. Since then, the mix of uses at Castle Quarter gradually evolved, until the site was snapped up by the Westgate Oxford Alliance in 2016. While some elements, including Malmaison Oxford Hotel, continue to perform strongly, others offer scope for further investment according to the council, particularly given the site's location close to the railway station and Westgate Oxford. Dan Levy, the County Council's Cabinet Member for Finance, said, "This is an exciting moment for Oxford City Centre, but it is not a decision that the council has taken lightly. We have carried out thorough due diligence and sought expert advice to make sure the risks to the taxpayers and the county council are low, while the prospects for real benefits are high. When the opportunity arose to purchase the lease, we looked closely at the financial, legal, and commercial implications. The clear conclusion was that returning the lease to the county council as the existing freeholder was the right decision, with good prospects for both the city centre and public funds. It was determined that the deal represented an exceptional opportunity." Mr. Levy added, "Combined with the transformation currently underway in and around the railway station, this creates an opportunity to refresh and boost the Castle Quarter and support positive change to the western approach to the city centre. The site is very close to Westgate, the city centre attractions, the railway station, and the new hotel that will replace County Hall. We're operating in a challenging financial environment, so it's really important that the council makes prudent, well-evidenced decisions. This decision allows the county council and a successor council or councils after local government reorganisation to influence very positive change in the city centre, while delivering a strong financial return to support the delivery of frontline services."
Oxford University has announced its list of honorary degree recipients for 2026, with 7 distinguished figures to be recognised. This year's honorees span sport, science, business, and the arts. Among them is tennis legend Billie Jean King, a former world number one who won 39 Grand Slam titles, including a record 20 Wimbledon championship. In the business world, Dame Emma Walmsley, DBE, who holds an MA in Classics and Modern Languages from Oxford's Christ Church, will also be honoured following a 15-year career at pharmaceutical giants GSK. Her time there included 9 years as chief executive before stepping down in December 2025. Joining her is Professor Daniel Adamoglu, an economist who was awarded the 2024 Nobel Prize for his research into how institutions shape economic prosperity. Fellow Nobel laureates, Professor Shuti Nakamura, honoured for his work in energy-efficient blue LEDs, and Professor Caitlin Carrico, recognised for her role in developing mRNA vaccine technology, are also to receive degrees. The arts are represented by dancer and choreographer Carlos Acosta, who retired from classical ballet in 2016 but continues to work internationally. Henry Louis Gates Jr., an Emmy-nominated historian and filmmaker, will also represent the arts by being recognised for his documentary work, including Frederick Douglass in 5 Speeches, which earned him an Emmy nomination in 2022. Honorary degrees are awarded to individuals who have achieved distinction in their field or made significant contributions to society. The ceremony will take place on the 24th of June at the Sheldonian Theatre. Students will also have the opportunity to attend with tickets released.
People have been left feeling trapped in their own homes at a dangerous city junction as more than 500 signatures have been amassed calling for it to be made safer. The campaign, launched on the online petition platform 38 Degrees, is asking both Oxfordshire County Council and Oxford City Council to ensure the junction at Rose Hill, Henley Avenue and Church Cowley Road be made safer. Campaigners argue that traffic has increased at this site, with vehicle flow changing in recent years since LTNs. Leader of the petition, Matt Jerwood, said, "There is no crossing, speeding is dangerous, red light jumping is dangerous. Some of these issues used to be manageable with less traffic, but the level of traffic has increased due to blockages of other routes. The frustration of road users has increased, and incidents and near misses are increasing." The campaign also calls for the introduction of measures to reduce stop-start bottleneck congestion and dangerous road user behaviours, and to add effective measures to slow cycles and scooters on the downhill approach. Mr. Jerwood said, "Residents need a crossing, red light and speed enforcement, perhaps a box junction and so on." He added, "You'll see in the petition text how people are affected, some feeling trapped in their own homes. The residents have good ideas, but they're not being properly asked or consulted by councillors. This needs to change." Blenheim Palace is hosting 7,000 amateur athletes and fans, as well as an Olympic medalist during its grueling triathlon next month. The Super Tri Blenheim Palace weekend will take place on June 6th and 7th, and will see competitors tackle a course through the grounds of the historic estate, combining swimming, cycling and running. Olympic medalist Johnny Brownlee will be competing in the Weekend Warrior category, which challenges athletes to complete as many back-to-back sprint triathlons as possible over the weekend. He will compete alongside the reigning Weekend Warrior record holder, Aid Fowler, who is returning. The event will feature both sprint and super sprint distance races, with opportunities for individuals and relay teams to take part. The course includes a swim in the Palace Lake, followed by cycling and running routes through the estate's ground. Athletes are encouraged to enter as soon as possible using the code RACEBLEND10 for a discounted entry fee. The full event schedule and entry details are available on the Super Tri website.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377 635. That's 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, our listener coordinator. Alternatively, you can call Margaret on 074-96-06-2280. That's 074-96-06-2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Or you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspapers skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.